Welcome to Leicester Fan TV. With special thanks to our pals at ADT Taxis, Beatney, Piglet's Pantry, Tiger, Leicester Garage Conversions, Pink Vehicle Leasing, Hologram, The Fox's Arms, Moyer Wade Interiors, and our chosen charity, Memphis UK. We bring you the fans' views on the match each week, and your views matter to us. Join the fans' debate each match with us. Follow us at Leicester Fan TV.
Good evening. Welcome to another Wednesday night's Foxy Tale. We've got a very special guest on tonight, Dave Smith, to come and talk about his new book and his time following Leicester City Football Club. So get ready to settle down for Wednesday night, the Foxy's Tale. So yeah, we've got a guest, Dave Smith, to come on and talk about his book. We'll talk about his time following the Foxes and all things Leicester, because his book is amazing what he's doing at the moment. It's not just about Leicester City. It's about the Tigers, the Riders, the cricket, you name it, all the sports, the finals that Leicester's had over the years. It's in his new book, and we'll get him to talk about it. So let's bring Dave on. Evening, Dave.
Hi there, Tom.
Hey, mate. You all right?
Yeah, not so bad, thanks.
Good, good. Let's start off the question. What year did you first start following Leicester City?
August 1959.
Wow.
A 3-1 home win against Chelsea, and that was it. I was hooked.
The journey then continues a year on. I mean, you went down in 1955, you say. I mean, who was the manager back in the day?
Matt Gillies was in charge then. And, I guess my first year I was Albert Cheeseborough, who was the big signing of that summer, yeah.
Big signing. Not in the money we talk about nowadays, but yeah, big signing back in the day.
No, less than a couple of days' wages these days, I think.
So you then follow the football club through the eras and then go on to start writing about them. I mean, what got you into writing the fossils of your books?
I was always one of those kids who was interested in the facts and figures. It must have started about 1980. I mean, I knew the club's centenary was approaching. And I thought, what I'd really like is a complete record of all the games they've played. But nobody else is going to do this job for me, are they? So I set about doing the research myself, put together a complete record of all the City games. And from there, I got introduced to the people at... who used to work in Epic House, the Leicester News Service, who used to cover the City games at that time. And they were involved in producing the Leicester City Centenary brochure. And they sort of said, right, can we use some of your stats then for the back of the book? And it kind of took off from there, really. Shortly after that, football stats books or football history books seemed to become a little bit fashionable. Looked around and thought, well, nobody's doing a Leicester City book. Maybe having done the initial research, I could get involved. Contacted a gentleman called John Eastwood, who sadly is no longer with us, who'd done a couple of books on Ipswich Town and Norwich, and kind of liked the way he'd done those. And complete coincidence, a gentleman called Paul Taylor had also been in touch with John with the same idea. So John put the two of us together. Paul had this unbelievable detailed research on players and biographies of players. I had all the sort of match-by-match stats. We got together and between us wrote the narrative history of the club. Then, sadly, John Eastwood's publishing company ran into financial troubles, so he had to pull out. So there was Paul and I with the basis of a complete Leicester City history, and no publisher. But the people who had worked on the centenary book back in the Leicester News Service, the guys had gone independent and started their own publishing company there. I'd actually been helping with a few, and they'd specialised in football handbooks, and I'd helped produce a few stats for those. And I went to see them and said, have you ever thought about doing a hardback? And they sort of said, yeah, we'd love the idea of doing one. We just kind of haven't had the right idea yet. I was explained what Paul and I had ready to go. And they said, yeah, we would love to do that. Test the water. We'll see if we think it's viable. So they paid for some leaflets to go out for pre-orders. They said, if we manage to get 750 pre-orders, it's a goer. And we got 1,500 pre-orders. And really, the rest is history from then on.
I mean, you talk about the stats and everything that goes into making, but how do you get all these stats? How do you, you know, do you get all the stats from that far back, you know, the goal scorers and everything like that? Because this can't be easy to build up a history.
Well, with the City, I mean, it was 4 years of sitting in the library, really, the reference library. An awful lot of work with the newspapers. And in Leicester, we were very lucky that right up until 1963, we had two evening papers, the Mercury and the Evening Mail. So you could go through both papers, dig out the details, see if there are any discrepancies. And yeah, you got those from time to time. One of the reporters would make an error. If you got discrepancies, then you've got to go and find, you know, football annuals or, you know, national reports or whatever, and eventually tied them down. I even spent a week up at the Football League headquarters back in the days when it was in Lytham St Anne's, going through their annals to sort of check odd discrepancies and work out, you know, why things didn't match in certain places. So, yeah, lots of work, lots of fun. I mean, going through the old newspapers in the library basement was just a brilliant time, you know, because you get distracted by all sorts of amazing things. But yeah, that's essentially where it came from. These days, of course, you've got the internet, and in theory, it's all a lot easier. So long as you don't believe everything that you read on the internet, you know, and you still check it out somewhere, then you know, it makes life a lot easier. You can do a lot of the research from your own study.
Fair play. I mean, Sean says, I mean, you've must have seen some players. Who's your favourite ever Leicester City player?
I would say these days it's probably a toss-up between Steve Walsh, Gordon Banks and Jamie Vardy.
So you've got a few different eras there. I mean, Banksy, one era, Walsh.
Yeah, and it's so difficult, isn't it, to actually compare players from different eras. You know, I mean, Banks was the world's best goalkeeper, you know, and played in the World Cup final when he was a Leicester player. You know, and you're not going to get much better than that, are you?
No. I mean, for me, it is a toss-up. So for me, it would be Gary Parker. Then it'd be a Walshy in that kind of era. Then going into the modern day, it's probably, as you say, Vardy up there and Casper. I mean, there's so many great players to grace this football club. And, you know, Birch will always be a legend and ambassador of this football club. And you would grace to see probably Adam play at the time.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, you know, lots of players who we've got real soft spots for over the years, aren't they? I mean, not just Birch. You know, I mean, Gary Lineker was great in his day. But somewhere, you know, I mean, Walshy, you know, if you cut Walshy, he'd bleed blue blood, wouldn't he? That's easy. Yeah. You know, and he was here for such a long while. And I mean, you know, the great thing about Vards is he has stayed with us. And, you know, he's now pushing his way into the real upper echelons of club goal scorers. And, you know, he will be a club legend, you know, however long or short the rest of his career should be.
I mean, you talk about him pushing in. I think he's in the top six now. Is he up two or top four? He's not far off.
He's number four overall in scored. Yeah.
I know he's a long way behind the first two. I think there are 200.
Nobody's going to get near those, are they? And I mean, I'm sure they would be, you know, for my grandparents, they would be legends in their own right. I think although actually my grandparents always used to say Sepp Smith was the greatest player who ever donned the Leicester jersey. But, you know, I can't judge that because he was before my time. Yeah, although the top two are out of reach, really, for Vards, then Ernie Hine in third place is only about 20 goals ahead of him at the moment. So not inconceivable that he could catch him this season. And certainly by next season, you know, given a fair run without injuries.
I mean, that's a crucial thing for Vards now. It is, you know, at the age he's at, he's not picking up a long-term injury to, you know, reach those records. But after the start, he's had 5 goals already. I mean, it's not a bad way to start the season.
No, not at all. I mean, if for once we keep getting a few more penalties, then who knows?
I mean, you saw some great times. You've been to Filbert Street. I was lucky enough to go to Filbert Street for 4 or 5 seasons before we moved. What's your favourite memory of Filbert Street of all time? Would you be like games and stuff?
Yeah, Filbert Street, I would go back to 1968 and a cup tie against Manchester City. And that was a sort of a night match. So it had all the, you know, the floodlights and the atmosphere of the night matches down there. And we played Man City the previous 2 seasons in the FA Cup. Been in the position to win the games at Main Road and finished up going out both times. We'd also played them twice in the League Cup in the same period of time and got hammered up there. And in 1968, third year on the trot, we drew them in the FA Cup, up at Main Road again, somehow came back with a goalless draw, replay at Filbert Street, half an hour gone, 2-0 down, here we go again. But we played really, really well. Roddy Fern got a goal right on half-time to reduce the arrears. And then a guy called Frank Large, who was a real journeyman, only with us for the one season, had an absolute purple patch. He's never played another game like it, really. Scored a couple. We 20 minutes into the second half, we were 4-2 ahead, and we held on to win 4-3. And I still maintain that was the best night ever at Filbert Street.
I mean, talk about Filbert Street, the atmospheres, you know, for me it was the League Cup runs and everything like that, the Cambridge game as well down at the ground, the playoffs. There were some special memories of that ground. I mean, things that people talk about, the new ground, but that Filbert Street on a floodlit night, the atmosphere was amazing. And I mean, you've seen some good games, I've seen some good games. Do you, out of the two, which one would you prefer? Do you prefer Filbert Street or do you prefer the King Power for the atmosphere?
I mean, the atmosphere, I guess, at Filbert Street, you know, I grew up as a teenager standing on the cop at Filbert Street, you know, so you kind of can't beat where you grew up, can you? It's always a special time, you know, and these days, of course, I'm, you know, a bit old and grey and I sit there quietly in the stand and watch it. So it's not quite the same, but there have still been, you know, 1 or 2 special nights at King Power, haven't they? And nobody's going to forget that night against Sevilla, are they?
Definitely not. I've got a question from Keith Goodall. Paul Taylor came across as a quiet but warm character. What were your memories of him?
Yeah, I mean, he was. I mean, he lived in London, so we only kind of got together on match days for a few minutes each weekend. So I wouldn't say I knew him really, really well. We obviously spent a bit of time together when we did the first fossils. And then, you know, everything was sort of via email almost when we were doing the updates because we kind of knew how each other worked and got on well. But, yeah, an absolute, you know, legend among fans, really. There was nowhere, you know, he wouldn't go, home or away. And even, in the latter years, because Paul sadly no longer with us, but... even though he was not a well man during the Champions League campaign, there was nothing that was going to stop him going to all those away games. And I know John Hutchinson, the current Leicester historian, bumped into him in Porto. And all Paul could say was a very breathless, "I never realised there were so many hills in Porto." It was a real, you know, he was clearly having a real struggle, but nothing was going to stop him.
as you say, that the history of the Champions League will never go from us. And, you know, we were so close this year getting Champions League football. But those, the nights of the Champions League, the winning the Premier League, the League One season at the King Power, that we've had some good times over the last few years there, considering when we first moved in, it was a troublesome time for the football club.
Yeah, it was. I mean, you know, we very nearly lost the whole lot before we got established, didn't we? But yeah, fortunately, it's worked out. Yeah, I mean, you also, nobody's going to take away the memories of that presentation day, are they? You know, I mean, and yes, the match against Everton kind of lived up to the billing. You know, if that penalty's sort of come out of orbit by now, you know, then fine. But
I just think he would have got a golden boot that year as well.
Well, he did, wouldn't he? Yes, I mean, you know, of all things, I guess it was a minor glitch, really. But yeah, you know, you can still sort of hear Andrea Bocelli singing, can't you? And it's still sends a shiver down your spine.
And we talk about the League One season. I mean, relegation to League One for the first time in the club's history was hard to take. I mean, following the team back then, I mean, was completely different than Nigel Pearson. Just your opinion of Nigel, really, what you thought of him getting us promoted over the years and coming back for a second spell.
I think the fans love him. You know, he was what we needed. And he bred a certain loyalty and team spirit in his team. And, you know, just when everything looked like it wasn't going to work out, I mean, to turn the team round in 2015 and that great run to escape relegation, you know, was, well, I mean, it wasn't just the great run to escape relegation, was it? It set us up for the following season's miracle.
I've got a couple of questions. One was, Ian Mills, the night Brian Little came back with Villa a few days after leaving, it was pretty intense. Never heard the noise like it. So that would have been at Filbert Street, if you remember that
one. Yeah, there was a lot of vitriol around that evening, wasn't there? You know, a lot of chants of Judas and whatever. And it was difficult, but you can understand Brian Little's motivation in wanting to go back to Villa. You know, they were his club, weren't they, deep down? But I mean, he did a great job for us in turning us round from the Pleat era into, you know, a team that were challenging and eventually winning promotion.
We don't say that name on here, please. David Pleat. Phil's asked the question.
Finally, we thought it was the second coming, didn't it, when he first came?
Phil says, does Dave think has been the most important Leicester City player in our history and why?
Oh, that's a really tough question, isn't it?
That's Phil.
Yeah. I really don't know. I think
I've got an answer from one of the fans. He's put Arthur Chandler.
Well, it could be. I mean, I was thinking, would you say Arthur Chandler or would you say Arthur Rowley in terms of goal scorers? I mean, Channy, obviously, the era when we finished second in the top division, and for a long while we thought, well, that'll be as good as it ever got. But, you know, then you had the remarkable goal scoring of Arthur Rowley, who got us promotion twice in the 1950s. But it's intensely difficult to try and say who was the most important. I mean, you could say Jamie Vardy. You know, you could say a combination of Vardy, Mahrez, Kante, and perhaps Adrian in that list. Yeah.
Okazaki, Leonardo, Joa. Yeah, of course you can. The name rolls off the tongue for those kind of things. I mean, going into now, what have you been in your impressions of Brendan Rodgers coming into the football club? He's been here 18 months now. What have you thought about it? I know he had a bit of a rough period towards the back in the last season, but are you happy with what you've seen?
He's certainly turned around the style of play. A lot of the time it's effective. We've got a young team that he can coach in his own fashion. I think the future looks quite bright. I mean, yes, we're going to have, you know, ups and downs, and hopefully not too many days like last Sunday against West Ham. But, you know, it's we're going to meet a lot of teams at King Power that play that way. And we've got to find a way to open them up. And that's been evident for a couple of seasons now. But it's not easy. And Manchester City found it wasn't easy the week before, didn't they?
Exactly, and you have to get on with it. I mean, we saw Sterling come out moaning and Rodri come out moaning about us sitting 10 miles behind the ball. But that's been about managers being more tactical than the others and asking how you change things around. So we've got to learn from that. Phil's going to ask another question, another tricky one, Phil. Dave, which goalkeeper is our best? So many to choose from.
Yeah, well, I unhesitatingly will say Gordon Banks. It would be a toss-up between him and Shilton for me. But again, that also goes back to my teenage years, doesn't it? You know, when, you know, and I think your heroes of your youth and teen years probably stick with you more than anything else. But we've had, you know, a load of others through the years. Mark Wallington was super popular. Casper obviously is moving right up the sort of record charts now and is our most capped international, isn't he? In fact, captain Denmark tonight, didn't he? I believe.
Did he? I was going to say, I thought, yeah. I hadn't seen the score. I know he was starting.
Yeah, they won 4-0. It's almost a letdown against the Faroe Islands. But yeah.
They didn't score any more.
No, they didn't score any in the second half. But as with most international friendlies, all raft of substitutions in the second half kind of disrupts the rhythm.
And we were going into your new book was come out. I mean, that must have been a tricky one to get all the stats for these, for the finals from every single club. But where do we start about your new book and introduce it?
Yeah, I mean, it was an idea I had about 30 years ago, actually. It's been bubbling around. I mean, at the time, it was kind of, why not have a book that covered the finals played by City, Tigers and the County? And I've been kind of amassing the information over a long period of time and also collecting the programmes from those finals and everything. Thought we got almost to the point of going ahead with it a couple of times over the last decade, but I think eventually a couple of years ago I thought, you know, if we don't do it now, I'm never going to get round to it. I'd already decided to throw in the Speedway because until last year, they'd only ever had one final with the Lions, you know, and it was back in the 70s when I used to go down there at Blackburn Road. So I thought, I'll put that in as a bonus. And I thought, well, if I'm actually going to do this now, I really need to add the Riders in because in the last 20 years, they've become a really major player in Leicester. And that was my weak spot because I didn't have a good solid background in basketball, whereas I kind of knew the other sports pretty well. But I have to say, I've had the most fantastic support and help from the basketball community. And I can't praise, you know, Kevin and Dan Routledge enough. They've been superb in finding stuff out. I mean, Dan Routledge is another staffer like me, actually. You know, he doesn't want to leave any stone unturned when it comes to digging the details out. They put me in touch with organisations that I didn't even know existed in order to be able to find, in some cases, a number of the actual match sheets, handwritten match sheets from the scorers for some of these finals to be able to sort out all sorts of details. You know, I had to work out how to present basketball in a fashion that sort of fitted in with the rest of the book. So we worked all that out, managed to get all the illustrations of all the programs from all the Riders finals as well, and generally put it all together. And at the moment it's in transit coming. I think it was printed in Bulgaria, so it's in transit. It should arrive in Leicester at the end of the week and should be out later this month. But it covers, I mean, you know, everybody's good. Anybody who's seen the sort of advertising blur will know the answer now. But, you know, if I'd have asked you a month ago, how many finals do you think teams from Leicester have been involved in? Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say there's a few. I was going to say, because I know Tigers had a period where it was every year.
Mm.
So that there's probably 10 to 12 already. And then you're going on top of that with City ones. You probably need 30 to 40, I reckon.
Yeah, 80 is the total.
80 finals.
I mean, it started out as cup finals, but you now have, you know, promotion playoff finals. You have championship finals. You know, all sorts. So, yeah, we're up to 80 between the five clubs. And so I thought, yeah, it's going to get out of hand if I let it go any longer. And I guess, in a way, I mean, the fact that we've suddenly had this hiatus in sport through earlier part of this year means it's going to finish up as a record of Leicester's finals throughout what I guess we'll eventually call the pre-COVID era.
Couple of questions for you, go Dave. One's another one from Phil. What is Dave's favourite stat and why?
Oh goodness me! I really would struggle to think of one off the top of my head as to you know, but I've known quite a few really really odd ones over the years. I can usually sit there and come up with one, and you know, when we sat watching the City and. The guys who sit next to me will turn around and say, "How on earth did you know?" Because I was sort of prepared for the game. But I do some stats pre-game for the guys at Radio Leicester and the guys at the Mercury. So I'm usually on the ball with what's about to come out and what landmarks are about to be hit.
That falls nicely into the next question. Dave, how do you find all the time to your research?
I'll give you... The two players who for Leicester City, whose careers for Leicester consist of one sort of appearance and nothing else, and neither of them ever touch the ball.
Got me there.
Yeah. Well, there was a guy called Malcolm Clark back in the 1960s, right in the last minute of a game against Leeds. Both John Schoberg and Derek Dugan were stretching off simultaneously at opposite ends of the pitch. Malcolm Clark came on as sub. He was only on pitch for about a minute and didn't touch the ball. And the other one, the very last game ever at Filbert Street, Leicester Tottenham.
Yeah, I was there that day.
I remember that one. Right at the very end, Tom Williamson came on as sub. Was again only on the pitch 30 seconds or so. Again, never ever touched the ball and never appeared again.
Wow.
And I find the time to do all the research. Yeah, I don't have a different day job because I'm now happily retired.
I think that's the question.
Know, yeah, I mean, when I was doing the original research, the library, of course, the reference library was in town. In Town Hall Square, and I happened to work in Market Street, so lunchtimes I would sort of nip down to the reference library, do sort of three quarters of an hour in there, and then, you know, whip back again to finish my lunch hour off. So that's convenient.
Jamie says, "Love this chat. Stats are right at my street." That's Jamie from the Fox's Arms in Alcudia, who's enjoying the sun.
I know they keep sending me queries. Say, is it true? Yeah, well, it's all right for some. We haven't seen it recently.
Well, we'll come to the end of the show, Dave. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on to talk about your new book, and hopefully it's a massive hit. I know I'm definitely going to be getting it when it comes out. And as I say, if any Leicester fans, I'm sure at some point we will get one as a prize and get it
out there. We'll sort that out for you. We'll make sure you get a prize to hand out. That's and if anybody does want to order a copy, then www.bluearmypublishing is the place to go to .com. And if you order before the 10th of October, you get 10% off and you get it signed.
Wow, there's a bargain. There's a bargain, 10% off.
What more can I say? Otherwise, you kind of have to, you'll probably have to go to Amazon or one or two selected bookshops. But the reason we're likely to go and buy directly from the publisher is because I've had to pay out my own money to get this published. And what I'm hoping to do is break even. And anything we sell through Amazon or bookshops, they take 50% straight off the top. Anything that goes to the publisher, we were able to feed it all back through. So I'd have to sell half the number directly to actually get my money back.
Well, so, say that website again then, Dave, so everyone knows it.
So www.bluearmypublishing.com. And you can, you know, you're supporting a local one-man business as well for Steve, who I'm sure you know.
There we go. Well, thank you again for coming on, Dave. Much appreciated for your time, mate. Much appreciated. And hope we'll get you on later on in the season to talk about the season and how it's gone.
Yeah, happy to do so.
Thanks, Dave. See you later.
Right, ta-da.
And there we go. Another Wednesday night at Fox's Tale. Different stories, different areas. You know, we talk about the great history of this football club, and we've gone back even further this time round. And to get someone who knows all the stats is even more interesting for me. Love a good stat on a weekend. So it's been a pleasure having you. We're now in the build-up for International Week. Wales for England, hopefully. Harvey Barnes gets some minutes under his belt. But as ever, thank you for coming on, putting your comments in there. It's always much appreciated. Once again, the video is going to thank our sponsors, because without them, you know, they keep us going and help us get the equipment we need to do the shows, and it's brilliant to them as always. So as always, see you soon, and we'll be back for the Aston Villa game in a couple weeks' time.
Welcome to Leicester Fan TV, with special thanks to our pals at ADT Taxis, Feedme, Piglet's Pantry, Tiger, Leicester Garage Conversions, Pink Vehicle Leasing, Hologram, The Fox's Arms, Moyer Weight Interiors, and our chosen charity, Memphis UK. We bring you the fans' views on the match each week, and your views matter to us. Join the fans' debate each match with us. Follow us at Leicester Fan TV.